All right, thank you, Don, and hello, everyone. Happy, you know, almost the end of year 2018. I have a song that I'm going to play, and the song that I'm going to play tonight is a song about the winter solstice, I guess we could say. But it's also a song about, you know, us being the light. The name of the song is Where Is the Light, and it's by Peter Mayer.
When it's late December, dark and cold,
where is the light?
When old man you was bending low,
where is the light?
When the sun runs off a bit too soon,
where is the light?
But a skinny moon.
Where is the light?
Can you tell me?
Where is the light? Where is the light? Where is the light? Oh, the light's inside me.
When it's dark each morning when I rise.
Where is the light?
And it's dark when my eggs are frying.
Where is the light?
And it's dark when off to work I go.
Where is the light?
And it's dark again when I get home.
Where is the light?
Can you tell me
where is the light? Where is the light? Where is the light? Oh, the light's inside of me.
It's in my skin and in my bones, in my heart and in my soul. That light of light so bright and golden, like a summer day. When the sun goes missing in the sky, it is rising in my eyes, chasing all that winter gloom. Candle flame.
Where is the light?
And I'm flaming like a fruit flambe.
Where is the light?
Oh, can you tell me where is the light? Can you tell me
where is the light?
Can you tell me
where is the light? Oh, the light's inside me. Can you tell me where?
That's a fun song, don't you think? Perfect for this time of year, you know. So, yeah, good. So the light's inside of us. Yeah. So I am here now for the guiding light, and I'm sharing from the teachings of Ramana Maharshi. And I am beginning on page 74 at the very top of the page. The section that we're in right now is called Self-Inquiry. So it's interesting because usually, we'll see what happens tonight. I'll tell you what's different. Usually I have like a devotee question and then a Ramana Maharshi answer and then a devotee question and then a Ramana Maharshi answer. Today I have a devotee question and then two pages of an answer to that one question. So let's see if we even get through this one answer to this one question tonight, because I very seldom go two whole pages in an hour. So let's see what happens. But let's start with the devotee's question. Instead of inquiring, who am I? Can I put the question to myself, who are you? Since then, my mind may be fixed on you, whom I consider to be God in the form of guru. Perhaps I would be nearer the goal of my quest by that inquiry than by asking myself, who am I? So he really wants to inquire. You know, he's looking at Ramana Maharshi, whom he considers God, and he wants to ask the question, who are you? Instead of asking, who am I? One thing that's interesting, you know, I don't know if all of y'all were raised in Christian households or not, but most Christians, of course, believe that Jesus is God, right? That Jesus is God. The rest of us aren't. Jesus is God. And I've noticed that that there are certainly, when you go to India, you will certainly find some Indians with that point of view about Ramana Maharshi or whoever their guru is. It's like, you are God. You know, there's something special about you. So, you know, depending on what this person's thought process is, and we'll see what Ramana Maharshi's 2-page answer is in just a moment. But depending on what this person's thought process is, who are you, you know, referring to your guru, could be helpful or could not be helpful. Because if I see the guru the same as me, and I inquire, who are you? And I fully accept that whatever I discover the answer to is also true of me, well, then that would be all right. But if I see the guru as special, you know, like Christians do Jesus, he's God and I'm not, it doesn't really help at all then in that case to inquire, who are you? Because no matter what answer I discover, I'm going to imagine that it applies to the guru and not to me. So it kind of depends on whether you accept you and the guru as the same or not from the get-go as to whether that form of the question would be helpful at all. We did have a retreat. In fact, it was the very first Awakening Together retreat in Santa Barbara in 2015. And one of our teachers at that retreat was Timothy Conway. And he actually had us practice the Who Are You inquiry. He divided us up into pairs. And he had us look in our partner's eyes. I know many of y'all have practiced eye gazing. So it's similar to eye gazing, except while we were gazing at our partner, we were really supposed to be inquiring, who are you? Accepting that whatever we discovered as we inquired, who are you, while eye gazing at them, was also true for us. And I actually found that to be very, very powerful. Very, very powerful. So I would say that sometimes that who are you inquiry could be useful. And then, of course, sometimes not, right? So we'll see. Hey, Dolores. We'll see how it goes. So let's see what Ramana Maharshi's answer is to this question. Can I put the question to myself, who are you? And I don't know if I'll read the whole answer and then go back and talk about it in parts, or if I'll read it in part and talk about it, because again, it's a very, very long answer. Let's just see where this goes. It looks like it might be a story, so we might read the whole thing. Whatever form your inquiry may take, you must finally come to the one I, the self. All these distinctions made between the I and you, the master and disciple, etc., are merely a sign of one's ignorance. The I supreme alone is. To think otherwise is to delude oneself. So before Ramana goes into this, I think the answer he just gave was basically the same answer that I just gave. That if you are asking, who are you, inquiring into the guru, who are you, but you think the guru is different from you, that inquiry is not going to work, right? So you know, he says eventually you have to get to the one supreme I that is both the guru and the devotee. That's what you want to discover. That is the true self. And now let's go into this story that he tells. A story from the Puranas about sage Ribhu and his disciple Nidaga is particularly instructive in this context. Although Ribhu taught his disciple the supreme truth of the one Brahman without a second, Nidaga, in spite of his understanding, did not get sufficient conviction to adopt and follow the path of inquiry. but settled down in his native town to lead a life devoted to the observance of ceremonial religion. But the sage loved his disciple as deeply as the latter venerated his master. In spite of his age, Ribhu would himself go to his disciple in the town just to see how far the latter had outgrown his ritualism. At times, the sage went in disguise so that he might observe how Nidaga would act when he did not know that he was being observed by his master. On one such occasion, Ribhu, who had put on the disguise of a village rustic, found Nidaga intently watching a royal procession. Unrecognized by the town dweller Nidaga, the village rustic inquired what the bustle was all about and was told that the king was going in procession. "Oh, it is the king. He goes in procession. But where is he?" asked the rustic. "There, on the elephant," said Nidaga. "You say the king is on the elephant?" "Yes, I see too," says the rustic. "But which is the king and which is the elephant?" "What?" exclaimed Nidaga. "You see the two, but do not know that the man above is the king and the animal below is the elephant? What is the use of talking to a man like you?" "Pray, be not impatient with an ignorant man like me," begged the rustic. "But you said above and below. What do they mean?" Nidaga could not stand it anymore. "You see the king and the elephant, the one above and the one below. Yet you want to know what is meant by above and below?" burst out Nidaga. "If things seen and words spoken can convey so little to you, action alone will teach you. Bend forward, and you will know it all too well." The rustic did as he was told. Nidaga got on his shoulders and said, "Know it now. I am above as the king. You are below as the elephant. Is that clear enough?" "No, not yet," was the rustic's quiet reply. "You say you are above like the king, and I am below like the elephant. The king, the elephant, above and below. So far it is clear. But pray tell me, what do you mean by I and you?" When Nidaga was thus confronted all of a sudden with the mighty problem of defining the you apart from the I, light dawned on his mind. At once he jumped down and fell at his master's feet, saying, "Who else but my venerable master, Ribhu, could have thus drawn my mind from the superficialities of physical existence to the true being of self? Oh, benign master, I crave thy blessings." And then Ramana Maharshi continues, "Therefore, while your aim is to transcend here and now, these superficialities of physical existence through inquiry, where is the scope for making the distinctions of you and I, which pertain only to the body? When you turn the mind within, seeking the source of thought, where is the you and where is the I? You should seek and be the self that includes all." And that's the end. So maybe we will get through this very long answer, since it was mostly a story. So again, for whatever reason, the devotee doesn't want to ask the question, who am I? Which is what Ramana Maharshi typically teaches. He wants to ask, who are you? And, you know, Ramana Maharshi, it appears, smells something fishy in this. You know, like I said, if you see the guru as special, as different from you, and then you ask that question, who are you? Even if you discover the answer to what the guru is, you won't also see it as yourself, and therefore you haven't accomplished anything. So what Ramana Maharshi is explaining through the use of this story is that the idea of you and I is a mistake. So if I'm contemplating my guru and saying, who is he or who are you, and leaving myself out, I'm not going to realize the truth. And in fact, I love this last sentence. You should seek and be the self that includes all. So what I would like to do is attempt to lead us in a meditation where we seek and be the self that includes all. So I'm going to take a drink first. And get myself comfortable. And if y'all would join me in a meditation, that would be marvelous. So I'm going to close my eyes. You can close your eyes also if you would like. I think it will probably be most helpful. I'm just taking a couple of deep breaths in order to, relax the body, kind of telling the body that we're getting ready to meditate. And I'm going to advance into awareness a little more slowly. I can feel myself going there immediately, but I want to advance into awareness a little more slowly, so that everyone who wants to join me can join with me. So I happen to have my hands in my lap like this. They're touching each other. So what I'm going to do is place my attention on my hands. And if your hands don't touch when you meditate, maybe place your attention on your seat where it's connecting with the chair, or your back where it's connecting with the chair. But just go ahead and place your attention with that physical sensation of touch. And what you really want to do with this physical sensation of touch is you want to explore it without thought. In order to do that for some people, it's actually helpful to pretend a little bit like you have never felt touch before. That's exploring with innocence. So you want to feel your hands or your seat or your back touching the other hand or the chair. This is the first time you've ever felt touch. Just notice everything you can notice about it, about how it feels. Is there a temperature to it? Is it warm or cool? Are there any sensations that you feel around the touch, any tingling or any other type of sensation? Just notice. as you notice this sensation of touch without thinking. Because your mind has become quiet, you may begin to notice many different sensations within the body. Go ahead and just let your attention move around and experience these different sensations. Some of the sensations might be touch, and some of the sensations might just be in the body where there is no touch. For instance, I have a tingling in my head right now where there is no touch. Just allow your attention to explore the different sensations. Let it go anywhere in the body that it wants to go. Just be aware of whatever it's aware of. Possible that the longer the mind is quiet, as attention explores these sensations, that you become aware of even more sensations. Just let attention enjoy exploring whatever sensation it wants to explore. Let it be like a child on a playground. Let it just run from one thing to the other, enjoying everything that it experiences. Don't attempt to define anything. Just let the child play. You are like the grandparent that is resting on a park bench. Attention is the child playing in the playground. And you are the awareness. It's just watching the child. You're the awareness that notices where attention goes. Notice that wherever attention goes, you are aware that it is there. If attention goes to sensations in the head, you see that. If attention shifts to sensations in the hands or feet, you see that. body is the playground. Attention is the child. And you're the grandparent, observing the child as it plays in the playground. Notice that whether attention lingers in one place for a while, or whether it bounces around from one sensation to another, you're aware of it. Notice that attention cannot step outside of your awareness. Can't hide from you. Wherever it goes, you see it. Even if it goes to thought and you get lost in thought for a few moments. Notice that you're aware that attention went to thought. Allow attention now to go outside the boundaries of this playground, the body. Allow attention to start playing with what it hears as well. Sounds in your environment. Let attention focus on a sound, any sound at all. Notice that you're aware of attention focusing on a sound. Now let's call attention back into the playground, back into the body. Let it focus on a sensation, any sensation at all. Notice that you are aware that attention is focused on a sensation. Now let attention go wherever it goes, whether it's listening to a sound, focusing on a sensation, Let it jump around if it wants to jump around. Let it linger with something if it wants to linger with something. Just be the grandparent, aware of the child playing. Don't restrain the child at all. Just let it go wherever it goes. But notice that wherever attention goes, you are forever aware of it. What are you? What are you that's aware of attention? That sees attention shifting about or lingering? What are you? If there are thoughts that answer that question, whether they give physical answers or spiritual answers, just notice the thoughts. Notice that you're aware of those thoughts. Thoughts are a type of mental chatter that you're aware of. What are you? Is there any color to you? Look, don't think. Look. What's aware? Thought. Sensation, sound, attention. Notice how open you are. Notice how every sound in your environment is allowed within you awareness. Sometimes the mind has a judgment about a sound. But notice that judgment is allowed within you awareness. Notice every sensation in the body is allowed within you awareness. Notice you can feel the entire body from head to toe. Every bit of it is within you awareness right now. No part of the body is outside of awareness. Every sound you hear is in awareness right now. Every thought that may occur is within awareness right now. Every sensation, every sound, every thought, everywhere that attention goes, notice how still you are. You are still and open. You allow it all. Mind. The mind is the great divider. It says this is sound, this is sensation, this is attention, this is good, this is bad. Does awareness say any of that? Or is awareness just present and open and allowing? Can you see that presence is like a live space that makes room for everything? Notice that the mind's definitions are within this same space. Notice that you are aware of the mind's definitions because you are this open space. You are this alive allowance. Notice how natural awareness is. Notice you can't turn it on and off. It just is. Notice you can't separate yourself from awareness. You can't hold awareness out and look at it like a ball in your hand. You are awareness. You are the open, alive spaciousness. Everything, every manifestation, from thought to sensation to sound, our eyes were open to sight. Notice it's all in this open spaciousness that you are. Pay attention to the awareness that you are. Notice everything's happening in you. Pick a sensation again, any sensation in the body. Let attention focus on it. Notice that a sensation kind of has edges. You could say here, the sensation is here. And then you can say the sensation is not here. It's a finite thing. Go ahead and sense the edges of the sensation you're focusing on. They may seem to kind of move a little or be blurred a little. You can still find those edges. Now, look. Can you find any edges to awareness? You easily found the edges to the sensation. You felt where there was sensation, and then there was not sensation because it stopped. Can you find edges to awareness like that? Or is awareness too formless to have edges? Like space doesn't have edges. Notice again that you are aware. That you are awareness. Notice how natural it is to be aware. Notice it takes no effort. Notice you didn't have to learn it. No one taught you awareness. Notice it's your natural self prior to any learning that may have occurred in it. Notice it's your natural self. This is the I. It includes all things. This is the I. It is the same between disciple and guru. In fact, disciple and guru are identifications and concepts that happen within this. Somewhere along the line, you learned disciple and guru. But notice this is your natural self prior to any learning. Notice that awareness is completely concept-free. The mind has concepts within awareness. So notice awareness is concept-free. Notice again that awareness is what you are. Notice you can't separate you from awareness. It's impossible. You can separate yourself from a thought. You can decide to let go of a thought. But notice you can't separate yourself from awareness. You can't decide to let go of aware. Aware is what you are. It's through awareness that every experience is known. Notice that awareness is the basic foundation to what you call life, to what you call yourself. This is the I. It is the same. Between devotee and guru. Between you and I. Between elephant and king. Notice all of those definitions are ideas. Within awareness. Learned ideas. And notice that awareness is prior to learning. Learning occurs in the space that is awareness. You witness learning. Take a couple of deep breaths. And when you're ready, open your eyes. When you open your eyes, before the mind really kicks in again, notice that whatever your eyes see is within awareness. With your eyes open, if your mind is still quiet, you'll notice the sensations in the body, the sounds in the environment, and the sight that the eyes see. And awareness is exactly the same as when your eyes were closed. You are exactly the same as when your eyes were closed. Nothing's changed. You never change. There is no difference between you or me. That's the true I. I think I'll play a song.
Hina kina mbala te kundona. God the other day, just walking down the street. He said, I have something I want to tell you, something I've been dying to say. You've been waiting for my return. The truth, I never went away.
I don't care if you believe me at all. I know who I saw, and it was God.
I said, hold on just a minute. How do I know it's really you? She gave me a simple answer. She said,
you don't, unless you do.
Wait a minute. I don't quite understand all this. Tell me, what do you want with me? You see, I'm not a religious type of person. He said, you don't have to be. I don't know if I'm the right person to talk to. You know a few of my puzzle pieces are missing. And she said,
I speak to everyone, but not everyone chooses to listen.
Well then, tell me how to treat my enemies. I mean, the people I despise. He said,
the answer will be clear when you see me in their eyes.
I don't care if you believe me at all. I know who I saw, and it was God. I saw God the other day.
She looked like you, he looked like me.
I saw God the other day.
She looked like you, he looked like
ever created, the grandest one is you. Now that you've told me all this, can you tell me what am I supposed to do? And she said,
you may think it's up to me, but it's really up to you.
Well, now my eyes are opened, and I could clearly see that all the things I paid for in life, I could have gotten for free. Now I'm going to share with you her parting words that day, and you might want to think this through. She said,
"If I only had one son, then tell me,
who are you?
Who are you?
She looked like you, you looked like me.
I saw God the other day.
She looked like you, you looked like me. She looked like you, he looked like me."
One of these nights, and about 12 o'clock, this old world's gonna reel and rock. Saints will tremble and cry for pain, for the Lord's gonna come in his heaven airplane.
Today's message, and Don, I'll make a draft post, okay?